In the center of the universe, on the planet Eternia, is Castle Grayskull, ancient forest of mystery, its power sought by the dark forces of Snake Mountain, sanctuary of sin and sorrow ruled by Skeletor.
Two men, Megaran and Marcos, have created a secret bunker deep within the dungeon of Castle Grayskull, and through a secret broadcast link between worlds, have discovered a way to bring you updates from this distant universe. This is Castle Grayskull Radio, a Masters of the Universe podcast. You have the power. So yo, here we are. This is episode one. It's me, Megaran, with my homie Marcos. We are excited to talk about this show. As you know, Master of the Universe is a thing again, man. What's old is new. This is I played with all the toys back in the day. I had a blast with them in 1981. This is like way old school. And the series came 2 years later. It was a Filmation TV series that apparently had a big following. One person who became a fan of this series later on in life was a man named Kevin Smith. You may know him from Clerks, all kinds of cool stuff. So Kevin Smith decided, I'm going to try to bring this back. And sure enough, he did it, man. I'm going to read a little bit of his notes from this. Kevin Smith is a showrunner and executive producer. And he said, I didn't get to play with Masters of the Universe toys while I was growing up. After spending the late 70s and early 80s buying me Star Wars action figures, ships, and playsets, my parents couldn't afford to finance another foray into an even more expensive world of plastic totems. So while I could watch the cartoon after school, I never got to make my own adventures with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Until now. So here we are, yo. All these years later, let's first start off, Marcos, what's your connection with He-Man and Masters of the Universe? Did you play with the toy, the cartoon, the movie? What's your background like?
Man, I was all in. Honestly, 81 was the year it dropped. Of course, that was my birth year. But my earliest memories to anything nerd-related or cartoon-related was Masters of the Universe. I can finally remember going to the toy store with my parents and picking out my first He-Man and, of course, my first Skeletor. I can't even tell you if they were the original series, but I know that the ones I picked up looked exactly like the cartoon. And also, on top of that, my first movie memory, not a lot of people know this about me, was to see Masters of the Universe starring Dolph Lundgren, which still to this day is one of my low-key favorite movies. And it was the first movie that I remember that my dad took me to see.
So, wow.
Yeah, man. It's a lot of history behind it.
There is some history here. I was wondering when it said 81, I'm like, you were born in 81. So it's interesting that you still have such a connection to this.
Yeah, like a deep connection. Like, dude, I had him on my room. I had the playset. I had everything. And it was like, it was cool because you got to think about it. Adults assumed that he was some way tied into like Conan or something, and they were like, all right, I'll rock with it. Like, you know, diesel guy, muscular gentleman with a sword, loincloth, it's cool, rides a tiger, lion, whatever. It's awesome, dude.
Right. It made sense, especially in the 80s. That was the whole vibe. Like you said, it was Conan vibes. There was all these other things that were about like big muscular blonde dudes who just, you know, handle business. So I initially thought when this was coming back, I was like, you know what? He-Man is a very kind of manly man series. You know what I mean? you had He-Man, you had Merman, you had Man-at-Arms, you had like everything was a man. And then so to balance that within the universe, they created She-Ra, which is pretty dope. I think that's like his sister, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, that's his sister. That was also probably the second or third movie my dad took me to see, which was The Secret of the Sword. It came out limited in theaters. And then, you know, as cartoon movies back in the day, after it came out in the theater, subsequently in the fall, it would be broken up into like five episodes during that week. Like Thundercats did that, G.I. Joe did that. Mm-hmm. So did Masters of the Universe. Yeah, that was his long lost sister. And it was the original She-Ra series was dope, in my opinion. And
I didn't watch it a whole lot, but I remember recently talking to my wife about it. She was like, yo, I loved it. And so when the Netflix series was released, I think it was, I guess a couple years ago now at this point, I was really, really into it. And I really loved it. So, but I knew immediately from these trailers that this was not going to be the same vibe as the She-Ra cartoon series, which is a lot more, I think, kid friendly. You know, maybe a little more, you know, bubbly and bright and, you know, pastels. And this one is not that. This is it's a pretty dark series, would you say?
It is. It is a pretty dark series. Like, I did like the She-Ra Netflix run. I in particular love the way that they articulated the sword that She-Ra has in the cartoon on Netflix. It's a younger crowd show, but like Kevin Smith said it from the get-go when he announced on Twitter he was going to be like, this is going to be my passion project, this is something that I like, and we've never got anything for kids from him, so this is kind of like the vibe that I expected. However, I was concerned because I don't want him to turn into like an anime type deal. Like, have you ever seen the X-Men and Wolverine anime cartoons?
Yes.
Like, they're not great. And it's like,
they get a little more grimy than the, you know, than the original series did.
Yeah, you know? But like, you know, like the whole shock value of everything looking so different. Like, you know, I thought they were gonna start doing jutsus and stuff like that if you're a Naruto fan. But I had high hopes for this show because the last time that they brought this back was in 2002. I don't know if you remember this. It was a short-lived two-season series in which they went back into the lore, and it was really popping. It was actually tied up there with the first Masters of the Universe. I believe the second series was called He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. And no, I'm not talking about that bootleg one from 91 in which they redid everything. But I went in here expecting greatness.
Yeah, I came in thinking, all right, this is going to be, I think I'm going to enjoy it, but I'm also coming in and ready to come in open-minded and experience something new that, you know, just kind of see where it goes. You know, I'm willing to be open-minded because the alternative is no He-Man. You know what I mean? Like, there is no alternative. So it's like, you can't be like, ah, man, the old 81 joint was better. And it's like, come on, really? You know, so I'm okay with seeing the franchise be brought back. So I was all about it, man. So let's get into it, man. Episode one begins a little differently than I would have expected. Now, I'll just start with the description for the first one, which is called The Power of Grayskull. Now, Eternia celebrates Teela as its new man-at-arms, but the knighting ceremony is cut short when old Skeletor leads a full-scale attack on Grayskull. Now, what I really love about this is that they jump right into it.
Exactly.
They don't waste a lot of time being like, remember 1981 where this happened and remember this happened? And it's like, nah, we assume you know. And if you don't, I think there's like a 1 minute intro on the episode.
Yeah, and the 1 minute intro doesn't really go into it. But it's like, if the series meant, it jumps in because it's supposed to be a direct continuation of the first show. Basically, He-Man has been He-Man for years. Like, this is not something new. Like, he's been doing his thing. Skeletor has been cursed with the 80s villain of "I'll get you next time, He-Man." Like, you know, right. It's like good guys win, bad guys lose, continuation. So
right. So this is all right. I was wondering about that too. So maybe you could clear that up for me. So the right now, this is 25-35 years continued from the literal last episode of the original series, right?
Correct. They don't really give us a hardcore time frame. It's from what we gather and from what because I rewatched these episodes a couple times, is that it's a couple years removed from the last continuity that we had. I know I believe in the first series, the last episode, and I might be incorrect, so internet, do not kill me for this. I believe He-Man jumped in a ship and left Eternia. So it like did away with that. It's just that He-Man has been doing his thing. The Sorceress has been around, and so has He-Man. So that was established canon. And then Teela, as we remember when we were younger, she was always that chick. And so, you know, her man in arms is already getting old. So this was a natural progression. So I thought it started really well, and it kind of like did not waste time into reintroducing certain characters.
Yeah, I appreciated that. And I will say, I'm going to just give huge praise to the animation team, the art team. Everybody looks great. I mean, right off the bat, you can tell who's who. Everything looks exactly the way you remember it. So you're like, yo, there's Cringer. Yo, there's Orko. Yo, there's the King. There's, you know, and the Sorceress. And like you instantly, at least for me, everything comes back because they look exactly like you need them to look, which I thought was really dope.
Yep. They look great. And they just look like, you know, they got better animation behind them. A little bigger budget. You know, Netflix has a bigger wallet than I believe it was Filmation.
Filmation, yeah.
Back in the day. So.
Yo, I want to talk about how I used to always kind of joke about people not knowing who Prince Adam was when he was literally the same size as He-Man. Like, same haircut, same size.
But yeah, just, it's like my man was hitting the gym all the time.
Muff loser. Like, I hope you guys, He-Man handles everything. Or, you know,
it's like, oh man, this guy, he wears pink. He's not He-Man.
Because He-Man would never wear that.
Yeah. It's like, why would He-Man wear that? And like, what was it, like some burgundy boots or something? Like, I don't know, man. I'm like, but
so yeah. So like seeing him like be scrawny as Prince Adam was like,
no, well, scrawny is not really the word, being normal. He looked like a normal young adult. You know what I mean? A normal prince. You know, he wasn't like made frail. He was just like a regular dude.
Yeah, I like that they did that. Like, they didn't make this dude, you know, just buff for nothing. Like, there's a Kevin Hart joke about the buff dude at the call center.
Hello. 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 Ah, I broke the headphones. Need another one, boss.
So like, I didn't want him to just be like the dude who's like fixing swords or something, but just big, dumb, strong for no reason. Yeah. But yeah, like that was cool to see. Like I could believe that he wasn't He-Man, like looking at him. I thought that was cool. So another thing I noticed early on is I see some vibes happening, you know, between young Prince Adam and Teela. You know, I see some vibes occurring. So I don't remember this from the old series, but were they vibing early on or not?
Because you got to remember the old series was made purely to sell toys.
Right.
That's where the concept came from. I think they kind of hinted that they were like rivals, and it was like a will they won't they type deal, you know, as much as they could for children. I don't think originally they intended that. I like that they, in the new series, Kevin Smith made that a thing, because it's like, you guys are the youngest people, the only people that were introduced that are in the same age group and are always spending time together. Like, you know, it's natural. I'm not saying that they have to be in a relationship, but it's natural that you have a little bit more than a friendship feeling or relationship. You know what I mean? You can't really call it romantic. It's like, it's a love that's beyond familiar. That definitely, you know, as you dubbed it, they had vibes in the first episode, like immediately off the break.
Yeah, I immediately saw that and was like, oh, okay. So to me, that explains some things that I thought happened later. But I don't know how much we can get into detail, but we can just jump right into it. So the action begins like mad early in this show. So we start off, we're getting some fireworks. Everybody's celebrating. It's about to go down. Teela's finally becoming a man of war. Or man at war, is it man of war?
Man at arms.
Man at arms, that's it.
It's so, basically the Eternian term of like lieutenant or head of the army or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. like you know, you're like the John Wick of the Eternia. Like, nobody can stop you.
Okay, the John Wick of Eternia. And so she's finally getting her props. And then the ceremony gets interrupted because it's going down. Now, we get to see some characters that immediately jump out to me. We see Evil Lyn, who is voiced by Lena Headey, also known as Cersei Lannister, who mm-hmm. I think does an amazing job. So on point, basically playing the Game of Thrones character. Like, at least it seems to me. Yeah. Like, she's playing kind of a conniving, evil, you know, a sorceress, you know? So it's kind of similar. But I thought she did a really great job. First, yeah, I got to talk about the voice cast. I think this cast is incredible, so I have to shout them out. I mean, you got Mark Hamill as Skeletor, Lena as Evil Lyn, Chris Wood plays Prince Adam and He-Man, Sarah Michelle Gellar plays Teela, does a great job. Liam Cunningham as Man at Arms, Stephen Root as Cringer, King Randor and Trap Jaw are Dietrich Bader.
And, from all Whose Line Anyway of fame, you guys might, if you watch Napoleon Dynamite, he was a karate guy.
Awesome actor. You're going to start seeing some familiar, or maybe hearing some familiar faces. Beast Man is Kevin Michael Richardson, who's done a ton. He did the Mahler twins in Invincible. He's done a ton of things on American Dad, Simpsons. He's the deep voice guy all the time. He's Dr. Hibbert on The Simpsons. So seeing Henry Rollins as Triclops was crazy. Like, it's some, and Kevin Conroy, Batman himself, as Merman, which was really dope.
And of course, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar's other counterpart, another 90s darling, Alicia Silverstone as Queen Marluna.
Yeah, was, man.
Like, this is the stack, like, cast. Like, you have Justin Long, of course, a well-known co-conspirator, Jason Mewes as Sinkor, the incomparable Phil LaMarr, who's in everything. He was Hero. There's a bunch of cool. Oh, the one that we missed. Look at the credits. See who Scareglow was.
Scareglow? Who was that?
Scroll down. You'll see.
Wait a second. Hold on. Let me look.
It's going to surprise you.
Tony Todd.
Yep. Wow. Candyman himself. Yo, they pulled.
Candyman on this joint.
Yep.
Priest Summer as Priestess. Like, you just, these are like, this is like a who's who of like people with like distinctive dope voices.
Like I said, Netflix has deep pockets.
Yeah. For sure. So, yo, here's a quick thing I noticed. And it's only because my older mind, it makes me look for these things. So the fight goes down and there's armies and there's people going to war on both sides. Yep. I start noticing that there's people of color in this army. And I thought that was dope to see. So hopefully that continues. We see some continued representation. But that was cool to see. Like, I was impressed. It's little stuff like that that jumps out to me and shows, but like,
we also got to address the elephant in the room that this wasn't an 80s fight. This was like, people were getting bodied. Like, there was people going down in this war.
Oh yeah. Yo, people die. Like, yo, they were not playing games. So I thought that was also interesting. That's when I immediately knew, I don't know how many deaths we can talk about, but yo, like the first 10 minutes, like not just deaths of like off screen, you know, garbage characters, but like people I had toys to.
Yeah.
Faker got sliced in half by Man at Arms. Like people was getting murked. And
yo, and your man, He-Man was using his sword properly this time.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, without spoiling the end, he definitely uses his sword in a way that he never did.
Yeah, in the entire that only like demented children were like, wait, why he never use his sword? Like,
right? It's like
I'm sorry, not demented children. Only individuals with older minds were like, wait, so you carried around this big knife? You ain't doing nothing.
Or cut nobody with it. You just used it to bounce back stuff and block. Like, this is an offensive weapon, dog.
So now that we went through the cast, right, and we talked about gingerly the plot, because we essentially want these episodes to be something that we just give our opinion on the show and not really get into too much spoiler detail. What notes or opinions do you have on this first episode out the gate, man?
Well, I was really impressed out the gate. Like I said, the animation was awesome. The voice acting was on point. I think the sheer kind of aggression of it took me by surprise, but in a good way. You know, like seeing people, you know, get knocked off. I was like, oh, okay, there's some high stakes here. You know, that's always my knock with, and I love comic book movies, I love comic books, I love anime, but I never feel like there's a lot of high stakes fights, you know, where like, if they lose this, they could die. You know what I mean? Like, I love Black Widow and all the Marvel movies, but like, I never feel like, yo, if they don't win the final battle, they could just die, you know? Like, I never feel that way. So it was cool to see like, oh, this show is not afraid to knock people off. So it might actually happen to your boy too, you know? So you start paying a little more attention to what's happening.
Yeah, you like, I legit was like clutching my proverbial pearls. Like every time there was a fight, like throughout the series, I was like, man, what is gonna happen? Like, you don't know.
Like, yeah, you don't know, man. There's a interesting quote where things start getting a little real, and He-Man turns back to Prince Adam, and they're like, he's just a boy. And then they're like, but this boy is holding the fate of this universe in his hands, you know? And then Skeletor's like, no, I want that power, you know? So it kind of shows me what the focus, I think, of the rest of the series is going to be.
Yeah.
Is the power of the universe and how like some things aren't always what they seem. There was a point where something happens to the castle and I was like, wait a minute, like what, you know? So it starts throwing me for a loop, which definitely makes me want to continue to tune in because I wanted to know what's happening. And and we talked about it earlier, but like Prince Adam keeping the secret of He-Man is a important point of reference too, but they make sure to tell you in the beginning that only four people know his secret, you know? And they're like, these are the people that will have been entrusted. And it's like Cringer, Orko, I think his mom, and Man at Arms, and Sorceress, I believe. Yep. Right?
And then the crowd, another crowd, the viewers, is then revealed that his mom knew, because of course, you know, a mom always knows. They were very poignant in letting you know that. And yep. Upon the secret being revealed, there was a series of events that led certain characters that were always loving and understanding on their show just do a complete 180 and is like, nah, I'm not with this.
Like, yeah, man. It got real at the end where he was like, wait a minute, whoa, like people start changing their tune a little bit. And you know, I remember the He-Man show where every episode it was like they would laugh and roll credits. Yeah.
You know? Like the funny meme when he was like, until next time, kids, and he'll jump on the
and then Orko says something funny and then it's ha 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 and then credits. But yeah. This ain't like that. Like, I will say that's probably the one thing for me. There's no humor You know, like I maybe I'm being a little bit dramatic, but I don't think there was any humor in the
entire thing. There's some humor, but it's definitely brought up to 2021. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly adult humor. And I think I have to believe that as the show goes through where it goes through, because we're only getting half of a season, so this is the arc is not going to be complete until the run is done. So I think by the end of the first complete run, we are going to get some sort of lightheartedness as we go by.
Yeah, I think we'll get more for sure. So the last thing I want to end on is that idea of trust. And I think we could start the next episode with it as well, because it's a pretty prevalent plot point, as Teela has an issue with trust, you know, because she has been fighting, you know, putting in the work for a long time and only knowing half the story, you know, and so therefore it's not going to be like when you find out the story, it's like, oh, all right, cool, now I know. It's like, nah, why didn't you trust me enough to know? And so I want to ask you, should Teela have known the whole story?
I gave this so much thought this weekend. And like, just when watching the episodes, I honestly agree with Adam. I think that was just a trivial part of it, because he trusts her. He put his trust in her as a friend and as a potential successor. Like, he left a lot on her plate because he was comfortable with who she was as an individual. I think in terms of a secret identity, we have seen this before in other intellectual properties that is meant because, you know, at that point, the superhero has not had enough growth to understand how that might impact his loved ones, or it's just a safety issue. Because think about it, like, you know, we saw in the previous series where his parents got attacked. And it's not because they knew that Prince Adam was He-Man. It's because they felt that He-Man always protected people from Eternia. So going after the king and the queen would be something that, oh, you know, we'll get a reaction from He-Man. So it's kind of like he wanted to protect his loved ones. And I honestly think that if you look at the list of the people that knew, there were people that were key people involved. I don't even think Adam knew that his mom knew. You know what I mean? There was never a scene in the previous series that showed anything like that. And even when it was revealed that she knew in this new updated version, it was just, he was surprised too. Like, everybody else was surprised. Like, if you think about it, everybody was a key player. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Orko helped He-Man. Sorceress, of course, helped He-Man. That was like his Yoda. Master at Arms basically had a no, so he didn't send the army and saying that you can't trust him. And Cringer, of course, that was the only person that directly understood what it was to be He-Man, because he was changed too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man. I've been trying to understand both sides of it too, but I do feel like protection is a really good point of that, you know, sometimes keeping the secret for protection. But that sounds like such a likely story, you know. I remember a man, I don't know if you know this man, a great poet, modern day griot of our time, named Aubrey Drake Graham, who
I'm familiar.
Okay, the thespian Drake. So Mr. Graham said, he said about his son that he wasn't lying to his son, or he wasn't protecting his son from the truth or from the world. He was protecting the world from his son, or something like that. You know what I mean? So like, it's this whole like, oh, I was lying to protect you, and it's like, is that just something that liars say, or the truth? You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. This might be the only podcast where you will hear a Prince Adam and Drake comparison, but that's why we give you the hard hitting stuff. But any final thoughts before we move on and end episode one?
I think the first episode was exactly what we needed to reintroduce the series, and it definitely left me wanting to see more. As a matter of fact, through this run, the initial run, I'm still waiting on more, and we'll see when they announce that.
We will see. I'm excited, man. So in the meantime, make sure you watch episode two before you listen to our episode two episode, because we're going to be talking about it. And for now, I will say goodbye. And you now have the power of the Masters of the Universe. You've been briefed by Castle Grayskull Radio. And until next time we return, make like Orko and disappear.
Poof.
All right. Peace.
Peace.